Greg Rierich, Mike DeMatos, and Adam Coaches from Hunterdon Medical Center. Welcome.
Welcome.
Thank you for being here today.
So I think before we even get started, let's explain what we mean by ORP, because we use the term all the time, and it's...
Well, we haven't really even introduced our guests yet, so maybe we need to back up a step.
Good point. So, Mike, you want to tell me a little bit about yourself and what your role is?
Yeah, sure. So within the ORP program, I'm the patient navigator, and I've worked in the mental health counseling field for about 7-8 years. I've been a school counselor in the Trenton School District. I worked as a crisis counselor down in Monmouth County for the Mental Health Association after Hurricane Sandy. Mm-hmm. And I've been in the addictions field for about a year now. And I've had this job for about 2 months. So it's kind of been trial by fire, but I'm really liking it so far.
And here you are on the radio.
Yeah.
Just like that.
And Adam, tell us a little bit about yourself and what your role is.
My name is Adam Coaches. I'm a peer recovery specialist at the Hunterdon Medical Center. I had my first heroin overdose at the medical center. It happened when I was 17 years old. So the hospital has a sentimental value to me in my recovery.
Wow. Thanks for sharing
Thank you for sharing that. Can you tell us what you do as a peer recovery specialist?
Yeah. When somebody comes in and they're given Narcan, they have to be given Narcan to see me. And at that point, it's a crisis situation. And then I go in and try to find out what kind of treatment the person wants. I have to give them all the options. Sometimes they don't know some of the different routes they can go, medically assisted treatment is one of the options that a lot of times it's talked about out in the streets, but then they don't really get good information until they get to see one of us.
So you're helping a patient who has overdosed and has received Narcan and is trying to figure out the next step.
Yeah.
So we're gonna go into that pretty detailed if we can.
We are,
in a few
minutes. I even brought Narcan with me. Thought perhaps we could show people on what it looks like, but I don't want to skip Greg, who is the director of this program.
Yeah, I'm the clinical supervisor of the opiate overdose recovery program, or ORP, as we refer to it. And I offer clinical support to all the peers that we have. Adam is one of them, and to our navigator as well.
Okay.
Excellent.
Perfect.
And you have been with Hunterdon Behavioral Health for quite a long time, right?
12 years now.
12 years.
Yeah, I helped run the crisis center out of the emergency room, and I had the opportunity and jumped at the opportunity to help run this program. I love this program. Our staff are doing amazing work on the front lines in the emergency room, working with people that are revived from an overdose. Who can be difficult to deal with at that time.
Yes, we'll talk about the challenges, too.
So I think we'll refer to ORP, and we'll also call it the Opioid Overdose Recovery Program, just to minimize confusion.
Right.
But maybe start from the very beginning. So in order for someone to receive your services, they literally have to have an overdose and be administered Narcan. Is that correct?
Yes.
So can perhaps explain what Narcan is.
Yeah,
and it's also referred to as naloxone.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Who would like to take that one?
I'll take that. You know, the police and the EMTs and emergency room staff will use Narcan. It's a reversal. When someone's overdosing from opioids, it suppresses their central nervous system, and they can stop, just kind of puts everything to sleep, mm-hmm. and then the Narcan reverses that in a very quick, abrupt manner.
So I actually brought Narcan with me because I think a lot of people hear about it but don't know what it's all about. And we offer Narcan trainings at our organization. I'm not actually going to open this one because this is sealed, but this is actually what it looks like. I don't know if anybody can see me. Why don't you do it, Jenny?
Maybe I'll smile at the camera. Here it is. It's just a small device.
And if you can explain, it's a nasal device, mm-hmm. correct?
Yeah.
Someone has an overdose. We encourage family members to have it, and that's why we've been offering naloxone trainings. I will do a little commercial. Our next one is September 11th, and they get two free doses of this.
The training is free and the Narcan is free.
Correct, correct. And so someone gets this just put right into the nose. You just press the plunger. Is it true that in many cases it requires more than one?
That's been our experience. They will oftentimes, once in the emergency room, receive additional doses as well.
Yes. And the reason for that is because the Narcan will actually wear off if the opioid dosage itself is so much higher than the Narcan dosage. Mm-hmm. The Narcan will actually wear off, but the opioid is still working on the system. So that's why you need kind of a booster.
So how long does the Narcan dose last?
I don't know specifically.
I've seen it wear off in as quick as 30 minutes, 40 minutes, and I've had many times where the nurse will say, do you want me to give them another dose of Narcan? And it's pretty easy to see if they need it or not because they're falling asleep. And I've had many times where they're trying to be engaged with you in conversation, and they start to doze off. And, you know, so, but the nurses are great with that. They're right on top of it. And they know when they're seeing the person, if they're starting to fade quick, they're checking with us very frequently if we need more or not.
Because you are in the ER. You're in the emergency room. So.
And four times is not uncommon to have given somebody that.
That's what I've heard. Yeah. Jenny and I actually were very fortunate. We were in a medication-assisted recovery training on Tuesday. And they did talk about, with the fentanyl and everything else that's out, that many doses of naloxone. So if they attend a training, they get at a minimum two doses.
That's
and we
great.
Are encouraging all family members to have one with them. I heard the Surgeon General speak down in Washington last year, and he said, really, every citizen should be carrying it with them. I mean, it's a public health crisis, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So then maybe let's just walk through the process. So I assume you get someone stabilized in the emergency room.
The emergency room. Well, then we have peers on call. Adam and six others that are on call 24/7, the emergency room will reach out to them, and they will, or Adam or one of the others will respond to the emergency room and attempt to engage with that patient and inspire some hope, get them thinking about, you know, meet them where they're at and
so, can you explain to us a little bit too? So, they've been administered Narcan. When it starts to, when they come, there is some belligerence, perhaps, because they are now feeling uncomfortable because they're no longer feeling the effect of the opioid. Correct?
Yeah. A lot of times, you only have a few minutes to tell them what you're doing and that you're there to help, because they'll either doze back off or they just don't want to hear it.
Right.
So, like, when I walk up and I can see that that's the situation where they're very irritable, I tell them that, look, my name is Adam. I'm a peer recovery specialist. I'm also in recovery. My job is to help you formulate a plan when you leave here. Do you want my help? Sometimes that's all you have to offer to them, because even that is, they're irritated sometimes with just hearing that much.
Is it true that someone goes almost into immediate withdrawal once the Narcan has been administered? And that's why they have these symptoms of being so...
Yeah.
They don't even know that it happened? Is that true?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Which is one of the reasons why, and I'm sure you're aware, that New Jersey is actually talking about allowing EMTs to carry buprenorphine on them, so that when they reverse somebody, they've had a lot of instances where that sudden jolt to the system, a person's running screaming out of the back of an ambulance because they're immediately in withdrawal.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to counter that, they're talking about maybe finding a way to ease those withdrawal symptoms so that you have a larger window in which to engage a person.
So can you explain what buprenorphine is?
Sure, yeah. So it's basically a drug that helps with the withdrawal of opioids.
Mm-hmm.
And if they were to administer buprenorphine in that setting, it would immediately start to ease the withdrawal symptoms. It doesn't take away withdrawal, it doesn't take a person out of withdrawal, but it would calm them, It would offer some relief, some needed relief in that instance.
Mm-hmm.
And so I personally think it's a great idea.
That bill was passed, right?
Yes, it was. I think a lot of it's going to be a lot of bureaucracy, a lot of red tape to go through. Who's administering it? Who's getting billed? Who's paying for it? As far as insurance goes, getting permission to do it, to administer it to a person. Narcan is a little bit less, invasive in a way. Like you're saving somebody's life. The buprenorphine is kind of an extra measure, and I think they're concerned about administering that without somebody's approval. So unfortunately, bureaucracy is going to get in the way of helping people, but I think it's a needed conversation. At least we're having it.
I have a feeling with so many passionate people involved that we're going to work your way through the bureaucracy.
Yes, I agree. Yeah.
Because, you know, one of the things that I did before our interview today is I went on to njcares.gov to look at what the latest data is. I think it shows that 5 people have died already in our county. Probably greater, I'm not sure. But and over 7,000 opioid prescriptions have already been dispensed. So we have a real life-threatening problem.
Those are the legal prescriptions.
These are the right. Legal prescriptions. Yeah, over 7,000 have been prescribed mm-hmm. so far in Hunterdon County this year. Yeah. Do you think we should take a little break now?
We sure can.
Yeah.
Yeah,
thank
we'll
you.
Be right back.
Oh, folks, you know what that music is. That's the time for modern design.
This blue thing is a really new trend. A lot of the designers are trying to introduce blue as a new cabinet color.
This is topical for you guys. This is really topical.
And the mother said, well, I'd like her room to be gray. And the little girl said, Mom, gray is the color of depression.
Hi, this is Rich Scuderi of Modern Design. We're on live every Wednesday from 2 to 3, and you're listening on WHCR-DB.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provides sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care. At a moment's notice, Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care.
Welcome back to Sharing the Hope. I'm your host, Jennifer, and my co-host is Rocky. We have a family support group that meets twice a month in Flemington on the first and third Wednesday at our office at 6:30. And today we're speaking with Mike, Adam, and Greg from the Hunterdon Medical Center Opioid Overdose Recovery Program. Welcome.
Thank you.
Welcome back. And I have a few commercials for ourselves. This is a shout out to Stacy, actually. There is a Recovery at the River Festival and Cornhole Tournament in Clinton, September 1st, from 12 to 6 p.m. From what I understand, the mayor of Clinton is going to come out. There's going to be a proclamation. So far, I think they have 15 teams set up. So we can post this on our Facebook page. Be a great day out by the river. And we have been talking a lot about Narcan. We have another Narcan training September 11th. That's also on our Facebook page. We can take up to 20 people, so it's very important to RSVP as soon as possible. You will get 2 free doses of Narcan. It can even be replaced if it expires or if you've needed to use it. And August 28th at Raritan Valley Community College, there's an overdose and suicide awareness vigil from 6 to 8 p.m. Back to our interview, which I'm learning a lot today. So, Greg, can you give us a sense of how many people have received this kind of service since this started, and when did it all start here in Hunterdon?
It started in the state in 2015, and then in a few 5 counties, and since then it has gone across the state. And we started in Hunterdon in 2018. Oh. And in 2018, we actually were up and running in March. And at the end of 2018, we saw just over 40 patients in the emergency room.
Excellent.
Right.
Excellent.
One of the other things we do that's unique at Hunterdon is we also offer to go out if someone is reversed from an overdose in their home by the police and the EMTs, and they refuse to come to the emergency room. We have the capability of going out to their residence to do that intervention. Our peer will go out to their home as well.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
So the peer is arriving when the medical staff and the law enforcement is there?
We would get a call. We would have to arrange through police or prosecutor's office to have our peer go back and do and meet with that person in their
home. Amazing.
That is.
And that's really just for
people that are
reported.
Were reversed. They're waking up. We've ruined their high. You know, the EMTs or police have ruined their high.
Right.
They don't want it. They're refusing to go to the emergency room.
But that's just, I'm not sure. It's not available if a family member has used Narcan. And the police or the EMTs were not there.
We would have to get the call from the police.
Gotcha.
Usually people will call 911. The police are usually the first ones out there. I'd say most of the time they're bringing them to the emergency room. But there are a small number. I'm not sure how many of people that are probably being reversed and aren't getting the opportunity just after a near-death experience. Have someone like Adam and a peer make that connection that only a peer can do.
Right.
They have the power, but you know, more powerful than a doctor, a counselor, a nurse. Our peers have a way of making that connection, getting that person thinking about hope and recovery.
Yeah.
And then if they agree to work with us, we're with them for the long term, the long haul.
And what does that mean?
Well, that means they can refuse if they agree to work with us. But then change their mind and don't want any services. But 4 months later, they call and they want assistance. We'll keep that case open.
Excellent.
And work with them. And
wow.
Our navigator will engage with them. Our peers will work with them ongoing. We try to do wellness and recovery plans with all the people we're working with. And we get them linked with doctors, insurance, we're trying to eliminate, the overall goal is to eliminate any barriers to recovery for these people, whatever they may be. And it's different for everybody.
Right.
So everyone's an individual. We treat each case individually. For one person, they need a job. For someone else, they might need housing. For somebody else, we're trying to get them, we'll go anywhere in the state to get them into a detox bed.
Is that challenging at times to find a bed?
It can be, but there's resources available, and we're there to with our peers and Mike working with them to keep supporting them till that bed's available.
Mm-hmm.
It increases their chances of us getting them into treatment. In fact, Hunterdon County, based on the 2008, we were one of the top 2 in the state in terms of success with linking people to treatment. We're one of the top 2. Yeah.
Well, congratulations.
And that comes through all the hard work that Adam and Mike and are doing.
How much of that is attributed to relationships, I wonder? Where you know people that are in the detox hospital rehab world that you can make calls and say, look, we really have a person who's struggling.
I think that's important. We have our providers come to our staff meetings, so our peers and our navigator get to know and meet many of the providers, so there's relationships. And most of the providers, the community liaisons, will give our peers their personal cell phone numbers to call them when they have a client that needs a bed.
And, Adam.
And peer-to-peer, I had a few weeks ago, I reached out to Stacy, and she gave me a phone number to get somebody in the direction of medically assisted treatment. And I didn't know where to reach, you know, and I was able to talk with her, and she gave me a phone number, and it was fixed within minutes. So
excellent.
That was just, you know, it was a blessing to be able to have that opportunity to be fixed so quickly.
Right. It's amazing.
And I mean, medication-assisted recovery is absolutely the most evidence-based standard right now, but it's still difficult to find providers.
And it's expensive still.
It can be very expensive.
Well, we have affiliation agreement, referral agreements with multiple medical assisted treatment providers that are willing to make our ORP patients a priority. And a lot of them will work with a variety of insurances or no insurance for limited cost.
So you are saving lives every day.
Oh, we're definitely saving lives, yes.
So you said you had 40 patients in 2018?
Yeah, we had 40 in two, and out of those 41 or two, only three refused to work after meeting with a peer.
That's stunning.
That is stunning.
Yes.
Are they mostly Hunterdon residents who end up in our hospital?
Surprisingly, no.
So
we have people from, we're near the border, Pennsylvania. We'll get people from all over. Our navigator has driven people back to Newark, wherever they live. If they show up in our emergency room, we'll work with them regardless of where they live.
Okay.
Mike might have some specific numbers of percentages on that.
Yeah, so actually about 75% of our consumers are Hunterdon residents, Hunterdon County residents. But that other 25% is, like Greg said, Pennsylvania, Monmouth County, Essex County, the farthest region. We have Cumberland County. So it doesn't matter where you're from. If you end up here, you get the same resources, the same opportunities that anybody else would get.
Oh,
probably due to the 78-31 corridor, right?
Yeah.
Or people are visiting friends or visiting. They're visiting friends or something like that as well.
And so, go ahead, Rocky.
So you mentioned that Mike would even drive someone back?
Oh, yeah. You know, if the opportunity to drive someone home from the emergency room is a great opportunity to expand on that window. The peer, like Adam's, engage with them, but to have a navigator or somebody willing to take that person home allows an extra opportunity to plant that seed and instill hope. Help get a feeling for what recovery means to them. Because recovery is different for everybody. And we try to meet the patients where they're at and what their vision of recovery is, not ours, and support that 100%.
So just to go through the situation again, the peer recovery coach is really the first person to make contact with the patient, and then Mike, you would step in as the patient navigator and help with where they're going to go next?
Yes, exactly. And to Greg's point, it's not always, the next step isn't always detox for somebody. It's not always a residential facility. I've had consumers say, I'm not ready for treatment. And that's okay, because if they need housing, housing's their main concern. You know, people need shelter, they need housing, they need to feel safe. And if they don't feel those things, treatment's a distant second.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if I can help somebody with housing and that meets that immediate need, then treatment will come later.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe 6 months down the road, maybe 2 weeks down the road, it doesn't matter. It's whatever they need at that moment.
So you're both planting seeds is what is happening.
Yeah.
And it's continuing to plant seeds with these people.
Yeah. And lest people think it's they're a captive audience in the emergency room or even driving them home. It's not, because I'm not there to talk. I'm there to listen. Mm-hmm. And whatever somebody has to say, for some people it's work. Some people it's job. Some people it's, you know, a safer environment. They're not in a safe environment, and it's finding that place where they can even think about treatment. Because not everybody can do that. Not everybody's in a position to say, all right, I'm ready for detox. I'm ready for, you know, MAT.
MAT meaning the medically assisted treatment.
Yes.
Correct.
And detox meaning a place where they can go for several days to get free of the substances in their bodies.
Right.
Just for our listeners.
Yes.
Who may, we throw these terms around.
And inpatient meaning in a hospital setting. And IOP meaning an outpatient setting. Correct?
Yes.
And where are most of these overdoses occurring? Are they at home? Are they on 78?
So I actually have the statistics in front of me. 61% were a patient or someone else's home, 13% outdoors, and 7% in a vehicle. So it is predominantly happening in people's homes or the home of a friend or in a car, unfortunately. But that's where it's happening. And I was actually a little bit surprised, I think, personally, that it was mostly in homes, but that's where it is.
Well, we work with families all the time, which, by the way, we are a service that you link people to sometimes also.
Everybody that we meet gets...
gets our card.
Yes. No, yeah, no, Greg's right. That's part of our packet.
Good.
Thank you.
But, I mean, we do hear that, you know, that's why a lot of these moms and dads are carrying Narcan with them, that it's happening in the home. I wonder if the Good Samaritan law, how much of that is... do people know about that?
And are, hey, let's talk about that a little bit.
Calling 911.
Let's share what that is exactly, yeah, because we were talking about it before we went on the air. So, can one of you tell us what the Good Samaritan law is? And
well, is it that's what if someone has a family member that's overdosed and they call 911 and the police respond, they're not going to be, they're going to work on the reversal, yeah, and not, they're not going to press charges. On
nobody
that.
Else is in trouble,
yeah,
right?
And more importantly, if it's someone that they're getting high with, you know, people are so afraid that they're going to be in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, if it's happening, what, 75% are happening in people's homes?
Yeah, over 60%, yeah.
Right.
And I think you're absolutely right. I think it had a huge impact because a lot of times people would have a friend overdose and say, if I call the police, he's going to jail, he or she's going to jail, I'm going to jail. And unfortunately, in that state, you're not necessarily thinking of saving someone's life. You're worried.
Right.
And we took away, hopefully, that barrier, another barrier to recovery.
You just have to keep talking about it.
Yes.
Yeah. No, and I think you're right to talk about it because I don't think everybody realizes that it's the case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we talk about it as much as we can because the word is not out there. And it's really important for people to know. I mean, you don't... no longer do people need to just go drop somebody off at the emergency room and leave them out front or
right,
or do nothing.
Which used to happen a
it
lot.
It used to happen a lot,
yes.
Yeah. Yeah, or do nothing for fear that they're going to get in trouble. Yeah. Do you, can you share like an example or a couple of little stories of what it's like to meet with somebody when they're waking up not very happy to be in the emergency room?
Yeah. The one that sticks out to me was this person woke up and I only had a few seconds to talk to them and to see, and I didn't even think that they wanted treatment. I was like, you know what, let me just throw my words at them, what I have, like about 30 seconds, and I was pretty much counting it out. And they grabbed right onto it. And I was like, I didn't think that it was going to go that way. And I think she's still reaching out to us and going through medically assisted treatment. But I did not think that she was going to be the one that grabbed it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, but what that did was gave me, it opened my eyes to, like, you don't know where somebody's at. And even though I had done 10 before that, that one changed it all because it was number 11 and it was a different outcome than I had thought that I was going to see.
Mm.
So it was something that went on in me that I didn't expect at all, you know, and that's why after that I kind of have a different, I learn something every time I go and meet somebody in the emergency room, even if it's something so minor. But that day I learned something very huge.
Because you never know when that little moment, right, that moment of clarity that someone's willing to get help, and every moment that you spend with them in the car driving them home or whatever, that could be the moment.
Yeah.
That's
plus, our peers and Navigator do a lot of phone follow-up, and I will pay them to do face-to-face follow-up and take people to meetings or meet them at diners, community. So they do a lot of follow-up to, again, trying to continue to instill that.
So I want to go back to something earlier today when you said the peer recovery coaches are, you have six, I think, and they're always on call. Are they physically in the medical center?
No, most of them live in the community, and they are on call for 12-hour shifts.
So in those 12 hours, you are ready to just drop everything and run over because you have this very tiny window. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, and being there as fast as you can is...
Right.
Because I've had the phone call where I try to get there within 35 minutes, and I've had the people leave before I've even got there.
It must be discouraging.
Yeah.
So how long do you follow up with people? Do you have a minimum amount of time? Or when you said you follow up with telephone calls?
Yeah, well, our peers will follow up for 8 weeks on the phone, and our navigators, it's like six months. We're in it for the long haul. The state model is much shorter than that, but we took a population health approach here at Hunterdon, so we'll do follow-up with people even longer than 6 months. I think the one, Adam, you were talking about that one, it was just after 6 months, and she was had relapsed and was reaching out again to get help, and we were there for her. We're not going to close the case and say, sorry, it's been 6 months.
Right.
Once someone agrees to work with us, they've got that support.
You mentioned a population health model. Can you tell us what that is?
Yeah, that's looking at some, their whole health. So Mike will drive them to their primary care physician or an OBGYN, or if they're worried about other, diseases or anything. The big picture.
Gotcha.
Health, insurance, work, shelter.
And that is a tough one in Hunterdon County, housing.
Yes, housing's a tough one.
So you must work with social services quite a bit.
Today, actually, and I did not realize I reached out to housing, the Department of Housing first in Hunterdon County, and I had no idea that Section 8, the waiting list, is about 4 to 5 years at this point. But to their credit, if anybody from Department of Housing is listening, thank you. They pointed me over to social services, and social services was tremendous. And this is my first experience with them in Hunterdon County, but I have to give them a lot of credit. They did everything they could to get me resources, and it was just today, so I don't know how it's going to turn out, but I feel really good about getting help for some of our consumers.
I just had a great experience with them yesterday.
Yeah.
And it's very helpful.
Yeah.
And never give up hope for that wait list.
No.
Because things do open up.
Yeah, and even if you need help today or tomorrow, it's no reason to forget about, even if you're on the wait list and it's 3 years down the road, you might need that help in 3 years. Like, don't forget about it. Please, stick with it.
Stay on the list.
Yeah.
Right.
Good advice.
We should probably take one more break, Jenny.
Okay, we'll take a break right now. Thank you.
What do you want to do when you grow up? When we were young, it's a question we were often asked. As we get older, our passions become clearer, our pursuits become careers, and if we're diligent, we begin to plan for the life we want to live. That's why, at Ameriprise Financial, we ask what's most important to you. Starting with our confident retirement approach, your Ameriprise Financial advisor will ask questions that help you arrive at a customized plan that allows you to realize your goals today, tomorrow, and throughout retirement. With the right financial advisor, life can be brilliant. Call Michelle Heidi and Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services Incorporated, today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 16 Lee Street, Units 1B and 1C in Clinton, New Jersey. The confident retirement approach is not a guarantee of future financial results. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services Incorporated, a registered investment advisor.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber, As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunter Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
¿Sabía que de cada 5 personas hay una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental? NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. Somos empleados voluntarios. Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información. Nuestro programa educativo de Familia a Familia está dirigido por miembros de NAMI para familiares y amigos de personas que luchan con dificultad de salud mental. Llámanos al 888-803-3413. Recuerda, no estás solo. NAMI está contigo y no hay salud sin salud mental.
And welcome back to Sharing the Hope. We're here with Greg, Adam, and Mike, and we're discussing the ORT program, which is the Opioid Overdose Recovery Program here in Hunterdon County and all over the state.
Yeah. And actually, we were just talking during the break about how the heck did we get here? And I mentioned earlier that there's 8,000 prescriptions that have been dispensed. That was 47,000 last year, and the numbers keep going down. But the majority of people, is it true, that are using heroin, they got addicted to the prescription pills, correct?
I don't know about majority. I don't know the statistics on it, but I was surprised once I got into the addictions field about how many people were starting with a prescription from a doctor after a surgery. It's stigma, but this like stereotypical drug user, just the average person who, you know, had a procedure, a minor procedure, and they got hooked on the opioids, and the opioids stopped doing enough for them, and they moved on to something like heroin.
Yeah.
And now fentanyl.
Plus heroin is cheaper.
Yes, and heroin's a lot cheaper. And once we started putting regulations in place, which should have been there from the beginning to stop the over-prescribing of the opioids, people found it was easier to go out to the street and get heroin.
Right. And then this thing called fentanyl got introduced, and carfentanyl. Either one of you want to speak to what fentanyl is? Originally it was a prescription for
sedation,
end of life pain and sedation,
well,
right?
And hospitals still use fentanyl as a pain reliever,
mm-hmm.
In certain extreme cases.
Mm-hmm.
But just to put it in perspective, the medical community uses morphine as like a baseline, so everything's compared to the strength of morphine. Fentanyl is 50 to 100 times the strength of morphine, and you mentioned carfentanyl. Carfentanyl is 50 to 100 times the strength of fentanyl, and it's a synthetic opioid.
200 times stronger than morphine.
Yeah.
And carfentanyl is a drug used to sedate large animals like elephants.
Yes, absolutely.
And so that is being mixed with not just heroin, but counterfeit pills, right? Like
yes.
Xanax bars and things like that.
Yep, I have heard that.
It's in everything now.
And
yeah, it's in everything.
Something, from what I understand, that's the size of a piece of sand can kill someone.
Yeah, basically a lethal dose of carfentanyl is like the head of a pin. You almost can't even see it with the naked eye. That's how frightening it is.
So have you noticed the impact of that? Have you
Last September, we had a spike in overdoses in the county, and it was connected to fentanyl in some of the larger major cities in the area, in Jersey and Pennsylvania, where they must have been cutting their heroin with a stronger fentanyl or more fentanyl at that time.
Yeah, Greg and I had a conversation, and you could almost tell if the person was going north to get their drugs or south because of how many overdoses were coming into the hospital. Because we would talk about you know, like, because that's a common question that I'll ask the people, where did they go to get it? Because at that point, you know, it's just kind of information for us to know,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's not going to hurt anybody. It's just kind of like, you know, if you know that bad stuff's coming from Trenton and you know somebody that's going there, you can kind of tell them, take it easy. But yeah, we were definitely able to see a difference from north and south during the month of September on where the people were going.
And you can tell, they brand the product, right? I say they, the dealers brand it so people know what the stamp looks like on a bag of heroin, yes. right?
Yeah, and we had the opportunity to know about certain stamps, and we ended up deciding that it was information that we didn't want. And from my past, I know that myself, if I knew that there was hot bags, being hot bags, ones that were very strong, I would go and look for them. Mm-hmm. That's how distorted my addiction was if I knew that there was bags with the Three Stooges on it and they were strong, I'm going to go look for that. So we ended up ruling out that it's not good information for it to get any farther than from us.
That's helpful to know. I just feel compelled to say this after you just shared that the desire to get a hot bag, as you called it, right? People aren't looking to die, right? I mean, that's what, there's a misunderstanding that, I mean, this is all unintentional overdoses. That's why a lot of it's happening in public places, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just trying to look to get a little more bang for their buck.
Right.
And we always say, you know, the addiction, it hijacks your brain. You're just not thinking normally.
Yeah, and to your point, it's, you know, nobody's born saying, I want to be addicted one day.
Right.
And that's something to keep in mind. And nobody who's using says, I want to die today. It's a search of a bigger, better high.
Mm-hmm.
And how far can I push it? And that overdose is the pushing it too far. And so Adam's right. It's, you're not thinking that this could kill me or that this might be too much. It's more of like, this is going to be a better high. Let me go find it. And he's right. That's why it's, that information stays, you know, with us and doesn't go farther than that, because you don't want to invite that.
Right. So we've talked a little bit about over prescriptions,
mm-hmm.
and, you've spoken to the needs, the varying needs of the people who come through your program. I'm wondering, how stigma is manifested in this, in the people who come to you, and if they have maybe lost support from their families, or how hesitant are they to ask for help because of stigma? Where does that, because we know it's not just, as you said earlier, it's not somebody out on the street necessarily. It's people in their homes here in Hunterdon County.
Mm-hmm. I can tell you, working out of the emergency room, having peers who are in recovery working side by side with the emergency room doctors and nurses has reduced the stigma mm-hmm. in our emergency room.
Among yes, the staff.
Because of the, among the staff.
That's excellent.
Of the work that Adam is, and others are doing. But
right.
I do think there is a, you know, stigma is still an issue.
Well, it is, but, you know, Rocky and I believe that if we keep talking,
yeah.
we normalize the conversation so people aren't afraid to ask for help, or family members aren't afraid to reach out for support.
Yeah, and it's important that they see what this is, what recovery looks like.
Yes.
We are productive members of society. One of the things that I was reading a little bit about ORP, just how it was intended to work and everything, is to stop this revolving door of people overdosing, leaving, coming back. I mean, I even hear stories of sometimes definitely more in other counties where more than once a day it happens. Do you see that this revolving door is changing?
We've seen a drastic change, yeah. There will be an occasional person that comes back, but the our recidivism rate is very low, yeah.
That's hopeful.
Yeah, it is hopeful.
And to back up what Greg just said, I don't think we've had a a person come in again for a second time in over a year.
Really?
Yes. We had some early on, including some like a day or two later, like as we're trying to engage them in treatment, it, you know, another overdose. But yeah, I think it's been over a year since we've had somebody come in for a second time.
And often, as you said earlier, you're still in touch with them.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yes.
We know they're still on this planet and doing well.
We try.
Better. Yeah.
We reach out regularly. And
do they occasionally or frequently have family members or loved ones with them when they're in the ED?
It depends. It's case by case, but it's very common for a family member to be with them.
And a lot of times it's leverage to have the family member in there. And it's beneficial for the person because they may be trying to protect their addiction, but the family member will look over and as long as it's okay, as long as they're wanted to be in the room, you know, and mm-hmm. most of the time they are, they will say, you use three times a week. You know, they'll bring the truth to it. The family member will. So it kind of exposes the addiction more. And it's not, you know, we don't judge that. It's just trying to get the person to be able to be honest with themselves on how much do you really use.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that's why, like I said, the family member, having them in there is crucial. If I had to pick a scenario, I'm going to want a mom or a sister in there every time. Mm. That's because it's two people looking at the problem.
And they're there because they love them so much.
Right.
Even though the behavior is terrifying, it's out of love. Otherwise, someone wouldn't be there with them.
So how do you three handle the traumas that you see constantly?
I pray.
Yeah.
I kind of think you have to really hang your head on the successes. So when you help somebody, that's big. And when you get somebody what they need, whether it's that housing or job or into treatment and they successfully complete treatment, you really have to kind of take that as a win and feel good about that because we're trying to save people. And the unfortunate thing is you're not going to save everybody. Mm-hmm. And you have to keep it in perspective. It's very easy to get hung up on that one person that you lose, that you were trying to help. And, you know, we've had a couple of cases where there were medical complications, you know, weeks, months down the road, and the person passes away. And it wasn't even necessarily from another overdose. It just their health had gotten to a point where their body couldn't do it anymore. Mm-hmm. And it's very easy to get bogged down with that. I think you acknowledge it and you grieve a little bit, mm-hmm. But you really have to say there are more people to help, and if you don't keep it in perspective, you're not going to be able to help all those people. You know, it's that part of self-care, taking care of yourself, and
right.
making sure that you can help, you know, the next person that comes in. Mm.
And I'm thinking of the 11th person that Adam described earlier, and that's the message Rocky and I have always, is primarily self-care.
Self-care with the family members. You know, they, when we first talk about what are you doing for yourself, and they're stumped because they're so busy trying to save their daughter or husband's.
They're obsessing with that.
Obsessing and
paralyzed with
GPS
fear.
GPS and tracking the car and everything else. So that's why we're curious how you manage this, because self-care is so critical.
Well, the wellness, the peers' wellness and recovery and the supervision of that is an important part of, in supervision. We always are promoting their own wellness and recovery. Plus, we'll do if there is a loss, we will provide debriefings as well. Mm-hmm. So our peers, it's part of the supervision and our staff meetings. It's constantly about, you know, what are we, you know, how are we taking care of ourselves?
Well, just like we tell the family members that they'll be better able to handle their responsibilities if they take care of themselves, you're doing the same thing for your staff. Mm-hmm. Because if we don't take care of ourselves, how can we help the people who come
good.
To us?
So I guess, does this mean that there are people who end up in the emergency department that in spite of all of the efforts that they actually can pass away in the emergency room? Do you have that happen?
People pass away in the emergency room or in, you know, in ICU days later for, but I don't know if we've actually had anybody that's actually, you know, had a, the Narcan has been a real...
The Narcan is working.
I'm telling you, it's
a game changer.
It's really working.
Yeah, yeah.
It'll
cases.
Ruin your high, but it'll keep you alive.
Yeah, of all the cases we've had in Hunterdon County, we have yet to have someone expire in the emergency room as a result of the overdose.
Yeah. Oh. I do notice that they make sure that the person's awake before I'm called. So... You know, like they did have a conversation with the patient. Like they're not gonna call me in if the patient is out, still not aware of what's
right.
going on.
Right. So I see this data that there were 75 Narcan administrations last year. We don't have the numbers yet for 2019, but that's pretty remarkable.
Yeah.
And in the whole state, there were almost 6,000 Narcan administrations.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're just one little piece.
We're one little piece, but we have a training almost every month, and it's sold out. What's interesting is we're beginning to see members of the community, business owners, coming in and wanting to get naloxone and keep it in the business.
Wow.
Yeah. Stores. Sometimes we hand-deliver Narcan to a family member to make sure that they have it.
Oh, wow, that's tremendous.
Yeah.
Well, it's peace of mind.
Peace of mind for
with
a lot
family.
Of our parents.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially if they have to wait to get a bed or something. And it's just peace of mind for that mom or dad to have that with them. But it's a miracle. It's a miraculous drug.
Yeah.
And, Mike, you probably deal with that, too, trying to find a bed if somebody's interested. That's...
Yeah. So Greg had kind of mentioned it earlier that there are beds. If you look hard enough, sometimes trying to find a bed in one particular facility, whether it's because somebody's close to that and they don't have access to transportation, it can be a barrier to getting a bed in a specific facility. But if you're resourceful enough, you can find a bed somewhere. At most, you're probably waiting a few days for a bed.
Mm-hmm.
But generally, if you're calling every day and the person you're trying to help is calling every day, you'll get a bed in a few days. So
squeaky wheel.
Squeaky
yes.
wheel.
Yes. 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 Please, anybody listening, you don't ever have to be quiet. You can be that annoying person that calls twice a day. Like don't ever feel like you can't because they will, if they have a bed open and you call, they'll get you that bed.
Good. So believe it or not, we're running out of time. So I was kind of hoping, since we call this sharing the hope, that maybe you could each share a hopeful story.
Something upbeat for us here
yes,
at the
please.
End of the hour.
This is heavy-duty stuff.
Well, I have worked with people. I've seen it over the long haul where we've been able to engage and support people in their journeys, and those journeys are different and varied. But I might mention something like hang your hats on the successes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
and it's great to see those and hear about those through my staff.
Yes,
and
knowing you're making a difference.
Yes,
yeah.
We have a lot of active. You know, we never close a case, like Greg said, but we have cases that are kind of inactive. We haven't heard from somebody. And we have a lot of active cases, and a lot of our active cases, people are doing well in the recovery, doing really well in the recovery. I'm even going to meet with somebody tomorrow who's well beyond that 6-month limit that the state, says you have to follow up for 6 months. They're well beyond that, and I'm still going to go follow up, and I'm going to meet that person tomorrow and make sure that whatever they need going forward, coming out of treatment, they're going to have.
So can you give us an example of somebody who has taken advantage of the things you have to offer and where they might be today as opposed to where they were last year?
Yeah, so I just started a couple months ago, so it's hard for me to say.
Oh, sorry. That's
wrong person to ask.
I know one that's, working, supporting themselves. They haven't been in jail. They used to be in and out of jails, in and out of person that came to our emergency room, overdosed multiple times and doing well.
Yeah.
Live one day at a time.
Well, and Adam, you've shared that you're in recovery. So probably just looking at Adam makes everybody happy and realizes this is why we're worth it, right? Just keep
Adam's
going.
Adam's a miracle as
Adam's
well.
A miracle. Do you have anything you want to add, Adam?
When I try to meet with somebody, I kind of came to, as long as I can give them a piece of something, like any kind of piece, any kind of tool that can get them a little bit farther than they were before they talked to me is kind of how I've chalked up it for it to be a win. As long as I give them something more than they had before they started, they have to put the pieces together on their own. But I feel like I have to supply as much as I am available.
You give them hope. You're actually farmers because you plant seeds.
There you go.
That's all you kept talking about. Hunterdon County.
Hunterdon County.
So I guess we're going to wrap it up. I think this has been a really interesting conversation, and I appreciate you so much coming. I did bring a safe disposal bag that I got a lot of these from someone at the hospital, and we do give this to our families. I know Walmart is giving these out, smaller ones, and so are all the ShopRites in Hunterdon County, and it's a way to dispose of the opioid pills and get them.
So I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we're going to put that on our Facebook page as well if
Absolutely.
We can. We are actually running out of time. So thank you all so much
thank
for
you.
Coming, and
Thanks
we really appreciate
Thanks,
it.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
All right.
How do I celebrate Hungry Ghost Day?
I'm not sure you do. I think you just beware.
Have you ever seen a hungry ghost?
Other than right now?
What's the difference between a hungry ghost and just a regular ghost? How are ghosts hungry?
I think that's the translation.
Their digestive systems are no longer functioning.
Anyway, the point being, we're having a lot of difficulties with the radio show.
So you think there's a ghost in the machine?
You're
ill.
You're a little bit slow, yes. And the police will be coming soon to take care of it. Yes, I got your reference.
Today in history. This time every week, for sometime every week, I ask you for questions about events that happened on the current date. Today is August 15th, 2019. I ask her some questions about events that have happened on August 15th. In years past, I also gave her the name of three people who were born on August 15th. See if she knows, and if Kiko knows, and you at home listening, if you know who they are, just by hearing the name. Let's go back to 1843, then for August 15th. Tivoli Gardens opens on this date. What is Tivoli Gardens? Where is Tivoli Gardens? What's the significance in the USA of Tivoli Gardens?
It's in Italy.
Okay, that's correct. One.
Well, it's named after... Does it have something to do with a World's Fair?
Strike 2.
Nope, don't know it.
Tivoli Gardens is one of the oldest still intact.